Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. John W., his sobriety date's in 2007, exactly a month before mine. So I call him the old timer. And I just met him tonight, but Tim Moore ran into him at Toco, which is a great meeting that meets on Wednesday night. He may tell you a little bit about his home group. Really looking forward to having John here. Please give John a warm welcome.
Hey, everybody. My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic. And as you heard, my sobriety date is March 29th. Yeah, that's when it is, 2007. And let's see, where should I start with my story? Maybe I was born. That'll work. I didn't used to think that. You know, I used to think that I came from a different planet, you know, and I was different from everybody else. I was born. I'm from a sleepy little town up north called Detroit. I don't know if anybody ever heard of it, but yeah, that's where I'm from. I had a fairly normal childhood. My dad owned a car dealership, and I lived in a neighborhood that had a lot of sports stars and stuff like that, and my dad would give those guys cars to drive. So, you know, we used to hang out with people that, you know, played for the Detroit Lions and Tigers and stuff like that. And my parents have quite a good drinking career as well, so I come from a long pedigreed line of alcoholics. And my dad used to throw these crazy parties, and there'd be a whole bunch of people over. And I'm like 4 years old, and this is one of my first memories of their drinking and stuff was they were throwing this party, and the police showed up at the house because back then they had 8mm projectors, and they had this thing set up on the dining room table, and they were showing porn movies on the neighbor's garage. And the police all showed up and disbanded the party and stuff like that. And you know, later on, my dad kicked the car. The dealership burnt down, like, when I was 4.5 years old. And then my dad got into the cemetery business, which is something else. And, yeah, my dad ran the cemetery, and my mom ran the funeral home. So they kind of had the market cornered. And you can imagine some of the morbid dinner conversations that we used to have. And so we started moving around a little bit because he worked with a corporation that managed a whole bunch of cemeteries. And My first drink was when I was about 11 years old, fifth grade, and I drank 2 bottles of cold duck. And man, I don't know if anybody knows what cold duck is, but it's the most god-awful stuff, man. It was okay going down, you know, but it was horrible coming back up. And that was the first time, you know, in my life I prayed, oh God, I'll never do this again. You know, I was hungover for 2 days. And, you know, but that just goes to show right from the rip, you know, I drank to disconnect. There was no social, you know, tipping a glass or anything like that. I wanted to drink until I was not myself anymore, you know, and I, you know, soon forgot about that whole sickness deal and got back into the parents' liquor cabinet and started consuming here and there, like in sixth grade. Of course, I ran with the preacher's kid because we all know how great the preacher's kids are, right? And we got in a lot of trouble. But, you know, drinking was for my parents. And in keeping with the traditions, you know, there's a lot of other outside issues that are part of my story. So if I'm talking about a green leafy alcohol or a white crystalline alcohol that keeps you awake for days on end, you probably know what I'm talking about. But it's all alcohol and has the same effect to me because I don't have an off switch for anything. And So I started experimenting with other things because my parents, you know, that alcohol was for parents, you know. So I got into, you know, the green leafy alcohol, and I can remember being in sixth grade, and me and the preacher's son stole every hood ornament off of every car in our neighborhood. And I had this big burlap bag full of hood ornaments, and there was some green leafy alcohol in a drawer, and I was at a dance, and my dad came in, and he had his, big pissed-off face on, and I was like, man, I'm in trouble now, you know, and he had found that stuff, and then it was off to military school with you. And so I went to military school, and I was pretty straight-laced till my junior year. Then I figured out that I could get away with things while I was on campus. They would kick you out if they found you doing anything, but this is all before drug testing and other things, you know. So they couldn't, you know, there really wasn't any recourse unless you just flat messed up, like I'll get to in my senior year. But military school really was one of the best things that my parents ever did for me. When I was a kid, my dad used to call me stupid and all that, and I believed it, and I just never tried, you know. And then I sat here, I am alone, you know, with all these little kids wearing uniforms and stuff like that. And I was like, man, how can I keep a lot of these dudes off my butt? And the thing was, just put more stripes on my arm. It's pretty easy. How do I do that? Well, make decent grades, you know. So I made all, you know, I never made a grade less than a B in high school. I got a 1560 on my SATs. I played all varsity sports, football, track, wrestling. My senior year, we were getting wild, but I was a platoon commander. I ran the drum and bugle corps, so I didn't have to really get in with the rest of the dudes. And me and some of my friends, we got all tore up. We were drinking, actually it was 151, and one of my partners puked in my room, but the cool thing was is the kid next door lit his room on fire, and so everybody was going to the room next door, and we got the mop bucket out, we got that stuff cleaned up, man, and got in there, and the two guys that were in a platoon, everybody could smell them, and they ended up getting kicked out of school, and somehow I managed to weasel my way through it, and I still thought I could get away with everything. I graduated from high school, and I was going to go to college. Well, I did go to college, and I went to the University of Michigan on a full academic ticket, and I made it through my freshman year, and then partying became more prevalent my sophomore year because, you know, I was at a school with all dudes for the last 4 years, you know, so now it's wide open, and since I from the city of Detroit, I knew people in Detroit, and my sophomore year, I got popped with a couple of pounds of green leafy milk, alcohol, and got kicked out of school. But that really didn't deter me. I went back, and my dad was in Missouri at the time, and then I was just going wide open. We used to like drink a case of Little Pony, Little Kings a night. And I was going to go to school at the University of Missouri, and we threw this party in this hotel room, and we all got tore up, and there was this fireworks tent outside this room, and we decided we were going to see if we could fill the room full of fireworks. So we did a pretty good job, to tell you the truth, man. We went out the window and grabbed all these fireworks from this tent and filled up this hotel room. The next day, there was a knock at my door. The room's in my name. I opened the door, all hungover, and two county officers looking at me, and then I can see they're looking behind me, and I look behind me, and there's like fireworks to the ceiling, and I'm busted. I'm real busted. There's a whole trail from the tent to the room, and yeah, I'm going to jail, and that was the great fireworks caper of like 1985. And they made this out to be a real big deal, and it changed my attitude for a long period of time. They said since I did so well in school that I was the mastermind of this great caper. And they threw the book at me. They actually, what they did is they gave me what they call shock incarceration, and they just threw me in a medium maximum security facility for 90 to 120 days. And I looked pretty boyish at the time. Well, I should have, because I was only 17. And it was pretty wide open, you know. And somehow I made it through there. I don't know how, but it was pretty scary. But then I had that attitude that, you know, okay, you guys want to make me a criminal? I'll show you a damn criminal. You know, we're going to go wide open right here. And so I left there, and I came down to Georgia because my mom was down here and everything. And I started working for Home Depot. And, boy, I wish I had that stock, man, because that was when Home Depot had 4 stores, you know, so I hung with Bernie Marcus and Arthur Blank and all them, you know, because the home office was right next to Charlie Magruder's. I don't know if anybody remembers Charlie Magruder's, but that's where the Home Depot home office was. It was right on that corner there, man. And boy, those were some times. And of course, I started getting in trouble. I got DUIs, of course, living in Cobb County, getting DUIs. That's a pretty obvious thing. And so I crashed a car one time, and I went to a treatment center called Anchor, which was on the south side, and I was doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, I was like, man, I could have killed these people, and da 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 da. And I hung with it for about a year, and then I was an angry person. I wasn't at that thoroughly convinced point yet. I was, you know, why can everybody else get wasted and I can't? You know, that was what was going through my head. Why can they do it? Why do I get busted and nobody else does? You know, it's probably because I consistently drive around at 4:30 in the morning, maybe. You know, so I figured that driving was the problem. You know, okay, I'll just quit driving, and then I get pulled over walking. You know, and I just figure, well, maybe this alcohol stuff's got to go. And I went on to the Green Leafy Alcohol Maintenance Program, and I got busted with that again. I got introduced to this white crystalline alcohol that kept me awake for weeks on time. Because, see, I was a blackout drinker. I drank for blackouts, and that was the whole deal. If I wasn't having a blackout, I'm going to have a Coke. The first time I went to one of those alcohol assessment things, you know, said, do you have blackouts? Like, what kind of crazy-ass question is that? Of course I have blackouts. You know, if I'm not having blackouts, I'm going to drink, like, lemonade or something. And then I found this other form of alcohol, and it was like, you know, because I drank to pass out. Well, now, guess what? I never have to go to sleep again. This is great. You know? And it just prolonged my addiction into something that was totally, you know, incomprehensible. Because, of course, I got busted with this quite a few times. Like, I got some trafficking charges, and I went stateside. I've been to some of Georgia's finest prisons and stuff like that, and that wouldn't stop me. I can remember one time Cobb County sent me to this probation detention center, and I get up there, and everybody else got 90 to 120 days. I've got 2 years. You know, and I'm like, you guys think I'm going to do this stuff for 2 years? You're out of your mind. You're crazy. And you know what? They said, no, you're crazy, and you're going to go to Phillips State Prison in the crazy ward. You know, and that was, you think that would have really changed my attitude about it? Because here I am sitting there with people that are, you know, cutting their wrists, throwing poop, all this crazy stuff, and you can't tell them nothing there because you're crazy, you know? And you just had to ride this whole deal out. And I come back on out, you know, and the thing is I'm so ashamed of myself when I come back out that I just totally want to disassociate again. You know, I want to pick right back up where I left off, and even worse, you know, I just want to disconnect, you know, because I came complete with a total other alter ego. You know, I had a different name and everything like that, and my son's mom didn't even know my real name until I had to forge my own birth certificate to get my name on his birth certificate. But I had a few trips like that, and then my whole deal was is I used to like to run on Cheshire Bridge Road, and everybody that's around lives around here probably knows all about Cheshire Bridge Road, and that's where I met my son's mom. I said, I'm Cheshire Bridge Road, and you know, I'm moving copious amounts of other type of alcohol around, and she's dancing around a pole, and that was a relationship that's just destined for greatness. And you know, it didn't really work out, you know, big surprise, right? You know, we're friends today and everything, and that's kind of cool. But I had a little boy, and, you know, I'd always said that if I ever had a child in this world, that I would change my life. Well, you know, it took me about 8 months to get to that life-changing spot. I'll never forget the night that that my life really changed, you know, because I've been in and out of these rooms. I probably haven't mentioned that my mom has like 25 years in this program and her husband has 30. So it's nothing that I was never a stranger to. It's just something that was crammed down my throat and I wanted to throw it back up, you know, because I'm different than everybody else. You know, I'm unique, just like everybody else. And so I find myself one night, and I had rationalized this stuff. If as long as I don't have the stuff and the kid together, everything is cool, you know. So I had stuff in the Midtown Bowl locker, and I look over at him. I'm dropping him off at his mom's house. I'm like, look, little buddy, I'm just stuck in a vicious cycle. I wish I knew a way out. I pray to God something changes. And so I drop him off, and I go do my thing, and I'm leaving the dollhouse down off Cheshire Bridge Road. And, of course, here's the funny thing, is one of my favorite hotels and stuff to stay in was the Holiday Inn in downtown Decatur, where now the Atlanta Roundup is every year. And, it kind of comes full circle like that. And I'm pulling into that underground garage, and, you know, Decatur's finest jump on me, and now I'm facing my third trafficking charge. And I go to jail. I'm sitting there with my phone. And there's enough people that probably have an interest in bonding me out. But something just said, you know what? I'm done. And I closed up that phone, and I was like, guys, just run me upstairs. And they ran me upstairs. I went to sleep for a couple weeks, like any self-respecting, crystalline, alcohol-using person would. And when I woke up, I wrote down what I consider my first step. I've laid it all down on paper that, you know what, I made all the decisions that put me exactly in the place I was that day. It was nobody else's fault because I wanted to use some other things. I kind of blew over. I was like molested as a child and had some other type of abuse issues and stuff like that that I really wanted to disconnect from. And I laid it all out on paper that none of that was the reason. The reason was is I made these choices to do exactly what I did. And when I laid that whole out, I consider that my first step, and that's something that I usually have my sponsees write. You know, it's exactly how I felt when I first walked in. And, of course, there was a big book just right there for me. And I was like, well, I'm no stranger to this. I'll start reading it. And it took a little bit for the city of Decatur to turn this case over to DeKalb County. And when they did that, my bond got cut dramatically. And this is crazy. My ex's parents is who bonded me out this time. And I got out, and I'm staying at their house. Because the only thing I had, all my earthly possessions were in this pickup truck that was impounded, which wasn't mine, so now I can't get back anything that I owned, you know. So all I got is a few articles of clothing, and I'm looking at my little dude, and I'm thinking, well, I know how to hustle up some money. And then it's like, no, man, things got to change. So I went up. My folks know these people in Marietta, and I went to this program in Marietta called The Extension. And it's basically an in-house treatment center for homeless addicts and alcoholics. And at first, I really didn't think that this whole deal was going to work. You know, I came in, and I was still going to just do it to get through it and maybe get the court people off me and all that like I've done previously. And I got in there. And I got my knocked out like the first three steps and got a sponsor. And I'll tell you what, asking somebody for help was one of the hardest things for me to do. You know, asking to bust my ego. Here I am with nothing, but yet I have ego sufficient, you know, enough to prevent me from asking somebody for help. You know, that's just kind of crazy, you know. And I was at that incomprehensible, you know, demoralization point, you know. I used to be ashamed to ride around in a car that had a headliner flapping, you know, and now, you know, I can't ask anybody for help when I don't have anything. And but I did. And so I was there maybe like 3 weeks, started feeling good, maybe got a few pounds back or something, you know, because when I got there, I only weighed about 125. And I was like, you know, maybe I'll just go to step nine and we'll just start clearing some of this wreckage of my past. That's exactly what I'll do. You know, so I hopped on the bus and I went down to the Atlanta Municipal Courthouse. And I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm that dude that has all these driving on suspensions and giving false information and all that. Well, like, oh, yeah, you're that guy, right? Yeah. Go to jail. And so I went to jail. And here I am in the Atlanta City Jail. And, man, you know, people smoke more stuff in there than they probably do out on the street. But the seed had been planted, and there were some people there that could really tell already. And they started asking me about that because I really wasn't interested in any of that stuff anymore. And, you know, I would tell them about the program. And it took maybe 3.5, 4 days tops. But some people from around there put some money together, and they anonymously bonded me out. And it was the first time in my life that I ever gotten into jail and got out of jail. And believe me, I've been in and out of jail a lot of times, but I didn't think about getting wasted. You know, I only had two thoughts. And one was I going to go see my little boy? Or was I going to make it back there before the prayer at 7 o'clock? And I rolled into the extension at 6:55, walked into that dining room. And when everybody started clapping, you know what? It was the first time in my life that I felt like I belonged somewhere. You know what? I was like, that is the real stuff right here, you know? And from that point on, I became that guy willing to do whatever it took, you know? I am willing to do whatever it takes to clean and change my life. Did I think those 12 simple suggestions on that wall would work for me? No, I didn't think it would work for me. But I'll show you it won't work for me. I will do that stuff anyway, and I'll show you it won't work for me, you know? And that's, you know, you heard me. I wrote down my first step. You know, when I arrived there, I pretty much felt like I was at step three. So the cool thing that happened was, as I'm ready to do my fourth step, and this little, seminar comes by, do all 12 steps in a day. And it sounds kind of crazy, but it was actually really cool, man, because we kind of touched on all 12 steps. And then it got me to starting to write part of my fourth step down, you know, and it wasn't as horrible as everybody made it out to be. And, you know, I did a little bit of it, did a fifth step, you know, partial fifth step with this dude. And the cool thing was, is I was right at that point in my recovery that I was ready to do this for real. And, you know, that was just like an icebreaker. And then I just let her rip. You know, there was nothing that I held back. And I wrote it all down and told my sponsor that. And, you know, like people say, I felt a tremendous weight lifted off my shoulders. Yeah, I did. It was my butt cheeks. And because I was carrying around all that crap forever and ever that I thought was so horrible, but it really wasn't that horrible, you know. But it was my comfort zone. You know, it kept me warm. It kept me, you know, different from everybody else or whatever like that. And once I shed myself of that, you know, I became more receptive to the solution. And it allowed my higher power to come in and do with me as he would, you know. And I'll tell you, I was one of those people that used to fear the God word, you know. When somebody said, God, you know, it scared me, you know. It's like, oh, no, not that, because I would confuse it with religion. And, you know, then somebody had told me that, you know, religion is just a cup in which to put spirituality in, and spirituality is everywhere, and you can find it anywhere. You know, I think, okay, man, I can deal with that. You know, and I wanted to go on a big spiritual quest and at first figure out exactly who this God guy was and exactly what he did. You know, and I studied Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, you know, Christianity, Judaism, you name it. I was ripping through it. And, you know, finally all of a sudden I had this epiphany that, you know what, maybe this isn't something for me to understand right now. You know, maybe that's something that I just need to work on a daily basis. And then the other thing was why can't all these philosophies be right? You know, if anything's for the betterment of mankind, who am I to say what's right or wrong? You know, so I'm just going to roll with it and just ask for a little bit more understanding on a daily basis and see where it goes. And, you know, I don't have to comprehend this whole thing right now. And that worked for me, you know. And so then after I got the fifth step out of the way, you know, step six and seven to me sometimes kind of get overlooked, but that's something, you know, here I am 7 years into the program that I still work on a daily basis. And my sponsor has told me that, you know, my higher power is going to remove my shortcomings in the order in which I can be of maximum service to other people. You know, it's nothing that I have any control over. you know, if I'm being a dick or something, he'll take that dickness away and make me to be more service to other people. You know, I'll be more personable. And that's just the way he works with me, I guess. And, you know, the cool thing is the foundation, I think, of my recovery is the third step. I say the third step prayer every day because I didn't know what to do, you know, but these old dudes in a book were saying the third step prayer. And I wrote it down, and it's something I still do to this day, every day. It's, you know, God, I offer myself to thee, because when it's not about me, things are all right, man. That's really how it is. You know, so then I got into 8 and 9, and that's where I really, you know, people say, when did you really lose the desire? I couldn't tell you the date, but I could tell you I was doing my ninth step when I realized that, hey, man, I didn't think about drinking today. That's some crazy stuff, because it's something I did for 24/7, you know, for 30-something years. And it all, that's where I think I was freed from the bondage of self. Because it showed me how convoluted my thinking really was. You know, when I went up to make an amends, you know, and I knock on a door, somebody that I think is just going to punch me in the nose, they gave me a hug. People that I thought would say, man, get the hell out of here. We never want to see you again. You know, they said, come on, man, sit down, you know, have some dinner with us and stuff like that. You know, and my sponsor told me how to make my amends. It's just quite simply, hey, man, I did wrong. What can I do to make it right? Nothing more, nothing less. And I would go do that. You know, what can I do to make it right? And 9 times out of 10, people say, man, just keep doing what you're doing. That's all you need to do is just keep doing what you're doing. You know, I had some financial amends and stuff like that, too. But a lot of it was just laying stuff straight on out. And all of a sudden, I was just like, you know what? I think I lost that fear, too. You know, because all those things that where I did people wrong and stuff like that, now that I went and made them right, I didn't. If I could face those situations, man, I can face any situation else out there. And so it did help me, you know, be of service to others. And all of a sudden, I'm laying down, you know, doing my 10th step, and it's like, you know, I haven't thought about drinking for a while now, and that's some good stuff. You know, so that obsession had left me. I've never been a great meditator. And step 11, I don't know, I'm just kind of ADD. I'll sit there and be like trying to meditate, and all of a sudden there'll be like a fly coming around, you know. Be like, wow, is that a fly? You know, I wonder what species of fly that is. I wonder if there's any other flies around here. You know, I wonder if he has any brothers or sisters, you know. I wonder where that fly came from. You know, that's the kind of stuff that spins around in my head like that. Man, I'll just start getting crunk up, you know, and be like, oh, I'm supposed to be meditating or something. And, you know, it's like, man, this isn't working too well for me here. And but I try, you know, I sit down. I really try to keep it simple and say, you know, just like please in the morning and thank you at night, because I can overcomplicate pouring a glass of milk. And that's just the way I am. And, you know, step 12, you know, about carrying the message of having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. You know, I had to do those steps to have that awakening. You know, today I have that new freedom and that new happiness that I never thought I would have. And, you know, like I said, I'm 7 years into this, and there might be 2 nights a week that I don't hit a meeting. Usually on Monday nights, I do some work with some kids at a place called the Hartman Center in Marietta, and that's pretty rewarding. It's like one step away from them being locked up in juvenile, and being able to carry the message into a place like that, and to, you know, just maybe if I have the opportunity to touch one kid's life, then it's all worthwhile. You know, and they all come from family situations which are real similar to mine, and I understand that. And it's just rewarding that I have the opportunity to do something like that. Tuesday nights is usually my only night off. Wednesday night is my home group at Togo, which is really cool. There's a lot of long-term sobriety there, and that's why I love it. You know, the average length of sobriety of the home group members there is like 18 years. You know, so if I want to learn something about life on life's terms, I go talk to those people over there. And Thursday, I do another fellowship and stuff like that, because I didn't discriminate in any type of endeavors that I did. So I go seek solution anywhere I can, you know. It doesn't matter what it is, you know. I will go there as long as it's all about the solution. Because, you know, when I first came in these rooms, I wanted to see how I could separate myself from everybody else. Oh, I can't be like them. I haven't used alcohol in suppository form yet. You know, it would just anything extreme to get myself away, you know. And then as I've been in here a minute, it's just like I am like every person in this room. And everybody in this room can tell me something that I can learn from. You know, and that's a cool thing about being able to keep an open mind. There's nobody that I'll close out. You know, there's some people, of course, that you, oh, no, not that guy again. You know, but usually that guy again will have something that will stick with me. It's like, man, you know, as long as I don't shut anybody out, that's the main deal. You know, this program has given me a lot of things. And, you know, the coolest thing about this disease of alcoholism is when we recover, we don't get just to the point where we were before we had the disease. You know, this will take us, the recovery will take us far beyond our wildest dreams. You know, the book says, rocketed into the fourth dimension. I don't know if it's the fourth dimension or not, but it's way, way, you know, far greater than I ever imagined. You know, I thought life would be boring outside the strip clubs on Cheshire Bridge Road. You know, and it is a challenge, and it's fun today, and it's exciting, you know, to be able to have a house and a couple of cars and a job, you know, that I've been at the same job for 5 years. And crazy thing was, just last week, I come around the corner of my neighborhood, and there's all these state troopers, you know, and they've got a roadblock going on in my neighborhood. And I'm like, what? State troopers in my neighborhood? That's kind of weird. And I pull up to them, you know, roll down the window, I give them my license, and actually my license, my registration, and all that, they match. You know, that usually doesn't happen. And, you know, he's like, oh, you still live there? I'm like, yeah, right there. There's my house. And he's like, okay. And he looks at my car. He's like, man, how dark's that window tint? And I'm like, man, I don't know how dark that tint is. He's like, how long you had the car? I'm like, man, I've had that car about 5 years. And he's like, you know what? If you've gotten away with it this long, there you go. You can have your license back and we'll see you. I'm like, that's cool. You know, and, you know, today I don't have to worry about, you know, things. Because back in the day, if I would have saw them charges lined up like that, I'm like, man, I wonder how fast them cars are. Well, we're going to find out, you know. And because I never slowed down and pulled over for him anyway, you know, you were going to drag me. It was crazy that the last time I went to court, I actually went in through the front door. I told that to someone. It's like, you know what? I have never been through the front door of a courthouse. I always come through the back, you know, and that's a new free. And they let me leave. That's something else, man. They let me leave. You know, I'm like, wow, this is different. And, you know, I told you I was in that trouble when I hit the extension. After I'd been there 9 months, I went back to court on that. And granted, this is a third trafficking offense. And I go in there, and they rattle off my past, which is pretty extensive, about 39 pages. And then they start rattling off what I was doing good. You know, I'd taken, like, parenting, anger management. I'd been there, you know, been documented clean for and sober for 9 months. And, you know, so they say, you know what? We're going to to give you probation on this whole deal. I'm like, really? And then he's like, I was actually insuring my son out of pocket and stuff while I'm living in a homeless shelter. That's kind of crazy, but he's like, since you're doing that, I'm just going to waive all fines and fees. You know, and this is one of the first times ever. It was the only time I ever completed a probation successfully. And you know, there's so many rewards in the program. I used to work at an automotive shop down here on Claremont Road. And this is a story about how just working the spiritual principles of the program can change your life exponentially. I was working there, and this guy would rip everybody off. He had a blown fuse. He'd want to EC it, you know, here, sell him a computer or something like that. I was like, dude, you know what? You're going to have to tell the stories. I'm just going to do the work. I'm going to be here in the back. I'm not talking to the customers. And for the first time in my life, instead of going half-cocked off and saying, I quit, I can't deal with this, I methodically came up with a plan. And I was like, you know what? I need to get myself out of this situation. So I started taking those ASE tests and stuff for automotive service excellence and passed a couple. I got myself out on a better job, you know. And as I progressed, you know, I tested up to being a master-level automotive technician. And today I sit in a cubicle in an office, a corporate office, which is crazy because I only used to sit in hotel rooms, you know, and not even the same one on the same day. And now I'm in corporate America, and I spend somebody else's money with the click of an enter key, no questions asked. You know, I buy automotive repairs for insurers. And, up to like $6,500 of somebody else's money, and they don't even ask any questions. So I'm like, this is crazy. And this was all, I'm just trying to be honest in all my affairs. Because I can come in here into these rooms and say a whole bunch of stuff, but it's really what I do when I leave these rooms and how I carry myself. And you don't have to be a member of this, you don't have to be a member of AA for me to extend the hand of AA to you. You know, by living the spiritual principles, it doesn't matter, you know, what walk of life or where you're at, I can always be able, you know, be of service in some form or fashion. You know, and sometimes being of service, it can be just something really simple like smiling at somebody and saying, hey, man, are you having a great day? How you doing? Good morning. It can be that simple. You know, somebody could be all grumpy and say, hey, have a great morning, you know, and it could change their day. And it really didn't take that much effort on my part to do that. You know, and I just have the ability to do that. And like I said, when I wake up in the morning, it's just like, hey, God, thanks for another day. Let me do the best I can and help somebody else along the way. And I smile at myself when I open my front door. And it's like, it's your world, dude, and I'm just passing through. And when I go out there and just do the best I can, the cards are going to fall where they're going to fall, man. And I just got to take myself out of the results business. As long as I do my best, I can be cool with the man in the mirror. And that's something I never would have dreamed of. You know, I always wanted to chemically alter myself. And today, I am cool with that guy in the mirror. And all I had to do was take 12 simple suggestions. I heard a kid in a meeting say not too long ago, he's like, well, you know, toilet paper suggested too. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. Toilet paper is suggested too. You know, you can use it or you can't. And it's just like those 12 steps. I can either use them or I can't. You know, and we know what the results are going to be. And you know, and today, you know, I have a whole new freedom, you know, where, you know, I used to think that drinking would take me out and I could be social and stuff like that until it took me to the point where I would isolate and not go anywhere, you know, stay holed up in a hotel room and all that. And today I can, you know, I can go to, like my son's football. He used to be in Cub Scouts. Thanks God. He gave that up over football because I like football a lot better. And, you know, I can go to corporate America. I can go out, you know, to a show, go see like Slayer at the Tabernacle or, you know, go to, you know, a 5-star restaurant and just fit in everywhere and feel comfortable, you know. And sure, if I get into some situation where there might be, you know, a lot of drinking or other things going on, you know, the book tells me, man, as long as my motives are pure, I can go into that situation. But if I'm starting to feel uncomfortable, you know what? Maybe I ought to heed that uncomfortableness and just jet, you know. There ain't nothing wrong with leaving, you know, because it's my life. You know, today I am the rock in my son's life, which I never thought I would be, you know. I'm the guy that he can depend on to always be there. I'm there financially, emotionally. I never thought I would be a responsible person. I always thought I would die before I was 30. I've had the same job, like I said, for 5 years now, and I've gotten promoted a couple of times in this big corporate environment, which is kind of weird to me, but hey, so be it. It works, it pays the bills, and I kind of like it, to tell you the truth. And it's funny because I can say some off-the-cuff stuff to my coworkers, and they'll think I'm joking, but I'm really being serious, you know? And one day they might get it, you know, if I let them in on it. The other thing is I give back at the place that I got recovery at as an extension. There was a newcomer meeting there on Saturdays that I've been going to for 7 years. We just had a camp out last weekend, which was a blast on Lake Alatoona. And to me, it's all about showing the newcomer that it can be done, because if somebody like me could do this, man, anybody can do it. You know, because I was one of a hopeless state. You know, like I said, I walked into that place with nothing but a backpack. And for me to, you know, ever since I was a kid, about that tall, I always dreamed about, you know, having a Corvette. You know, I bought one this year. And that's just my project car, though. You know, and it's not about having stuff, but it is about making your dreams come true. And that's a big deal, because they can come true. And I didn't think it would work, man, you know. But I did it anyway, and it did work for me. And the cool thing is I can sit up here and talk to you all tonight and be cool with a guy in the mirror when I go home and brush my teeth and everything and be like, you know what, that was pretty cool. Because I'll tell you what, it's a little bit nervous standing up here and everything. But to me, it's the second best high in recovery you can get, you know. Because when I'm done with this, I'll be like, whew. And, but, you know, the best high in the world, for me anyway, is being able to give a sponsee a year chip. You know, to watch that light bulb come off in somebody's eyes, and for them to just simply do what you have done. You know, and some, you know, it's always a little bit of ego inflating that somebody will come up and ask you, you know, hey, will you be my sponsor? It's like, okay. And I'm not like a sponsor Nazi or anything neither. You know, I really don't demand people, you call me 5 times a day at this time. You know, what I really do is just do exactly like I have done. You know, hey, write yourself out something on powerlessness, exactly how you felt when you came in here. Because you know what? My ego does swell up. And all of a sudden, that same piece of paper I wrote down 7 years ago, I know exactly where it's at. And I can sit there and I can open that thing up and I can read it and be like, you know what? The only thing I got is this minute right here, right now. And I might as well enjoy it, you know. And that's really what it's all about, is staying in the here and now. And, you know, because tomorrow ain't here. I can't change the past. All I was given was this moment, man. And I need to be grateful for the moment. And today it's pretty easy to be grateful for the moment. You know, there's life on life's terms is going to happen. You know, cars are going to break down or people are going to hit you or... I'm really retarded when it comes to relationships. Those things really mess my head up like nobody's business. But I can deal with them today because I can come in these rooms and talk to people about it and admit my shortcomings. It's not as hard as it was for me to ask for a sponsor right off the bat as it is, you know, as easy as it is now to say, hey, you know what? This stuff's really giving me a problem and it's spinning around in my head. And what did you do about it? And somebody will say something real simple and be like, man, why didn't I think of that? You know, and I'll go do it, and the little monkeys inside my head will quit playing around, and I'll be okay, and just move on and learn from it. You know, because I stunted my emotional growth a great deal by using alcohol. You know, because I didn't deal with anything, and so I've got a little bit of catching up to do. But the cool thing is being able to admit it and being able to grow today. And with that, I think I will close and thank you all for listening to me.
John, thank you for changing my day. And I'm glad you tried to prove us wrong and ended up getting it right. Tinsley.
Well, my head was in tomorrow and my feet followed history. I had an insane notion I could hoodoo everything around me. No. 'Cause two